I hear my ill spirit sob in each blood cell as if my hand were at its throat. I myself am hell. Nobody's here.
This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, he was a great teacher, too. Robert Lowell was born in 1917, 100 years ago. It's his centenary, so we'll probably be hearing a lot more about him before the year is out. He was a dominant figure in 20th century American poetry. He started off in the 1940s writing intricate poems using traditional meter and rhyme. But by the late 1950s, he was writing looser, less formal poems, often using his troubled personal life, his divorces, his mental health, for subject matter. Lowell was hugely influential, not just for his poetry, but also for his teaching. His students included Sylvia Plath, Anne Sexton, Frank Bidart, to name just a few of the more famous ones. Today on the podcast, two of his former students remember what it was like to learn how to write poetry under Robert Lowell's tutelage.
It was absolutely horrible.
Kathleen Spivak attended Lowell's classes at Boston University in the late 1950s.
Well, not horrible, but the fact is, he really wasn't interested in student work. He would come into class with a huge pile of leather-bound, kind of flaking books of ancient poetry, or maybe not so ancient, that he had lined up to study the minute he got over the student poem.
Spivak writes about the experience in her book, With Robert Lowell and His Circle. The class, she says, would read poems submitted anonymously by students, and after discussing them, Lowell would quickly move on to a classic or contemporary poem that he would discuss in great detail.
It was an ordeal because nobody we'd ever met was willing to spend 3 hours on one line, one Blake line, say.
So his classes were they largely monologues, Robert Lowell monologuing about a poem?
Pretty much. I mean, you could say that. That sort of puts a negative slant on it. But yeah, his questions were rhetorical. You know, what does this mean? And, you know, pity the poor graduate student who ventured a guess because, you know, you weren't supposed to say anything. You know, he was going to answer, what does this mean?
Apparently, Lowell did seek out student input when it came to discussion of certain poems. During this period, Lowell was writing Life Studies, the book that unleashed his new informal autobiographical style.
So he wanted to try his own poems out of the class. And, of course, he would submit them anonymously. And there were some graduate students in that first class, I remember, who tore a Lowell poem, quote, anonymous, apart, and then walked out and realized that they'd wrecked their entire career. But, you know, he wanted to go over different endings obsessively.
So by now you're probably wondering, why would anybody have wanted to take Robert Lowell's class? Why did so many supremely talented young poets flock to him? Well, part of the reason, as Kathleen Spivak reminds us, there wasn't a lot of choice back in those days.
At that time, there weren't the creative writing classes or workshops, so there weren't that many places to go. You could go to Iowa, or you could go to John Berryman, or you could go to the West Coast, or there was Boston. And Lowell, by his reputation, attracted writers from all over. People came up from New York to audit his classes.
And in general, in spite of what you've been hearing, they were not disappointed.
It wasn't so much that he was teaching people to write. He was teaching people to read poetry, to read deeply.
He was especially interested in how a poet made a poem.
Line breaks, word choices. His favorite saying was, what does this mean? And then he would go into all the alternate choices that the poet might have had, and why did he choose this word? At a certain point, he went so deeply into the poems that you felt at one with the creator, and we were allowed in. The door opened.
The door opened. What better way to describe what really great teachers do for their students? They open doors in the mind. Kathleen Spivak continued to study under Lowell when he started teaching at Harvard in 1963. At the time, another young poet by the name of Lloyd Schwartz was a graduate student at Harvard. He wasn't taking Lowell's class, but he did screw up the courage to visit the famous poet during office hours.
I just took a deep breath and found out when his office hours were and showed up. There was no one else there. And we had this very warm, friendly meeting, and he read my poem. Mm-hmm. And he was very polite about it, if not enthusiastic, and then said, well, there was something wrong with one of the images in the poem. It didn't make sense.
This poem talked about a bow being forged, a bow as in a bow and arrow. Yet bows aren't forged, Lowell said. They're made out of wood, so they're carved.
I was, of course, a little crestfallen, but I was also thrilled. It was so exciting to have this great poet that I admired so much look at my poem, look at it very carefully, and really deal with it in a very professional way, having to do with the consistency of the images. You know, in some way, I was regarding this as nitpicking, but in another way, I got it instantly that you can't just say what you want to say. You have to think about every implication of every word.
Yeah.
It's certainly what I tell my students.
So he was right.
Yeah. I think he was right.
Lloyd Schwartz now teaches poetry himself in the MFA program at the University of Massachusetts in Boston. He is also the classical music critic for NPR's Fresh Air with Terry Gross. In his graduate school days, Schwartz says he kept going to Lowell's office hours, even after they evolved into something altogether different.
Well, after a few years of Lowell being on the Harvard faculty, instead of having these individual office hours, Lowell's office hours became a kind of open poetry workshop that anyone could go to. You didn't even have to be a Harvard student. You just had to know about it. It wasn't highly publicized. Undergraduates, graduate students, literally people off the street just drifted in. It was very informal. You knew you had to bring copies of your poem. Uh-huh. There were, I don't know, a dozen people, 15 people, sometimes 10 people every week. You could drift in whenever you felt like it.
In Schwartz's recollection, at Harvard, Lowell didn't use this group as a sounding board for his own poems, as he had at BU. Classic and contemporary poems were discussed, but a lot of time was taken up with poems submitted by the group.
You know, someone would bring a poem and pass it around, and he would read the poem or ask the person to read the poem, and then he would go through the poem line by line. And he didn't like most of the poems that people brought in. Mm. And he didn't expect to, but he was very clinical about the poems, critical, but in a generous way, never hostile or nasty or insulting, always, try this, or have you thought about doing that, or, well, do you think this really works, or just asking the group what they thought about a phrase or a line or even a bit of punctuation.
Lloyd Schwartz recalls one shy Radcliffe undergraduate. He doesn't remember her name, but one day
she brought in a poem that amazingly Lowell really liked. And everyone in the group that day was just sort of excited because Lowell was excited, and excited because, wow, here is a really good poem by one of us. And there was this flurry of, oh, look at this line, look at this stanza, look at this image. People getting very excited about it, talking about the poem. And then as things kind of settled down, it was an undergraduate who always sat at the opposite end of the seminar table from Lowell. And he was working for the Harvard Advocate. And he kind of leaned forward and cleared his throat and said something very close to, we at the Advocate would be very interested in considering this poem. And really, without missing a beat, Lowell said to the young woman, "Oh, you can do much better than that." Of course, I found out later that when Lowell was a student, the short time that he was a student at Harvard, the Advocate never published any of his poems. So he always had a little kind of needle about the Harvard Advocate.
So what do you think Robert Lowell did for you and for other poets?
As a teacher, he was a role model for how to carry on traditions of poetry in the classroom with my students. I can actually still hear some of Lowell's inflections in my own voice when I am teaching an MFA workshop. As a poet, he was the primary example of everything you could do if you were a living poet.
Well, let's hear just one of the things he could do as a poet. I asked Lloyd Schwartz to look on the Poetry Foundation's website and choose a Robert Lowell poem to read for us. He found one of his favorites, a sonnet called Randall Jarrell. The poem is part of a series of poems in Lowell's book, History.
Lowell was writing these great poems about the other great poets, Eliot, Pound, Robert Frost, and poems about his own contemporaries like Elizabeth Bishop and Randall Jarrell.
Jarrell was a close friend of Lowell's, and he had recently died.
Possibly suicidally. I mean, he was walking down a road at night and was hit by a car. People think he might have actually walked into the headlights of the car.
Jarrell doesn't even show up in the first 9 lines of this sonnet, which describe a fitful dream. Then, in this dream, Randall Jarrell appears and speaks to Cal, as Robert Lowell was called by his friends. Here's the poem.
Randall Jarrell. The dream went like a rake of sliced bamboo, slats of dust distracted by a downdraw. I woke and knew I held a cigarette. I looked. There was none. Could have been none. I slept off years before I woke again, palming the floor, shaking the sheets. I saw nothing was burning. I awoke. I saw I was holding 2 lighted cigarettes. They come this path, old friends, old buffs of death. Tonight it's Randall. His spark still fire, though humble. His gnawed wrist cradled like kitten. Quote, what kept you so long, racing the cooling grindstone of your ambition? You didn't write, you rewrote. But tell me, Cal, why did we live? Why do we die?
Terrific poem.
Yeah. It's strange, and I think that's one of the great qualities of Lowell's poems. They're unpredictable, they're unexpected. I mean, he gives Jarrell some very kind of pointed criticism about Lowell's own personal ambition, racing the cooling grindstone of your ambition, and then the way he didn't write, he rewrote. I mean, he did write, but he also rewrote a lot.
It's as if Jarrell is accusing Robert Lowell of not asking the fundamental questions, but instead racing along with his ambition to avoid those fundamental questions.
I guess, you know, there's certainly an element in that, but I take the end of the poem a little differently. I take the end of the poem as these are really Jarrell's questions, and he wants Lowell to help him answer those questions. That it's Jarrell looking back over his own life and saying, why did we live? Why do we die?
That was Lloyd Schwartz, and before that we heard from Kathleen Spivak. You can read Randall Jarrell and a good selection of other poems by Robert Lowell on our website, where you can also find other podcasts about him. Just do a search for Robert Lowell, and his poems, his bio, and all sorts of other Lowell-related things pop up. Do let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. If you like the podcast, please say something about it on social media. It helps get the word out. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.